Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them. From the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums, to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. My guest today is David Weiss and Jane Donnell of the Northeast Historic Film site and place. I've known about you for years. I was a curator at the Rhode Island Historical Society for a number of years. I think, you know, I'm not sure how many people are aware of what you do and how you do what you do. I know I've put Bucksport, Maine on my visit list because I would like to see it all up close and personal. But anyway, David and Jane, tell us something about what you do and what people might want to know about the Northeast Historic Film.
Northeast Historic Film started in 1986, and it was based on the realization that, yes, you'd heard of the Library of Congress or the Museum of Modern Arts or great big places that kept really important things, but everyday life was documented in the region. And if you wanted to tell the story of any particular place, like Northern New England, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island, whatever, you needed someplace closer to home to do it. And none of the institutions in Maine, anyway, were willing to undertake it. You know, the Maine State Museum was busy doing what they were doing, and the university library was doing what they were doing. And so there was kind of just an opening. And I think my feeling was, people watch, and even more so now, but even 30 years ago, television was the dominant form of sort of communication. The ability to sort of tell the story of local communities, local people, local areas through film and video was important, and somebody needed to gather it up. So that was pretty much why we were founding.
And you collect home movies.
We collect home movies. You know, it was kind of accidental. We started with this old logging documentary that was taken in 1930, and the guy who shot it wrote a script that went along with it, and we put it back together. That was our first project, really. And it was great, but that was a home movie. And we didn't even think that it was a home movie because he was documenting, you know, the steps of his business. And when we started looking around for other things like that, we eventually realized, wait, these are, they're all home movies because TV stations didn't exist and like Hollywood wasn't coming to shoot the Maine woods. And so if you wanted to tell the story, you needed to tell it through home movies. And home movies have some wonderful aspects that, you know, people are interested in all sorts of things. And they, you know, if you opened a drugstore, you'd be really interested in like your drugstore and, you know, that streets or, you know, whatever it was. Your family, you tell the story of parades that went past your house or whatever. But we find great diversity in home movies, and it's really, we've broadened out our collections now, and we do television, news, film, and other things produced by the state or whatever. But home movies is still sort of a backbone for us.
Home movies are really special because You know, I deal in a lot of family photos, but when a client has home movies, there's that sense of wonder when you actually see one of these people you have a 2D picture of move. You see what they're really like as, you know, not just posed for the photograph, but as they move through a scene or interact with other members of the family. It gives you a real insight into who they are and the family dynamics.
And a lot of familial characteristics come through. I think we've seen a lot of people that see relatives like a couple generations back, and they see their brother's movement and how their hand gestures or just body language. It's really enlightening for people. And sense of place with home movies can't be matched. I mean, you see a building that anchors a town, and you see it through the generations, and you know exactly where that is, and it really hits home for people.
Literally. What's the earliest item in your collection?
Well, the earliest item in our collection is from 1901, and it's called Drawing a Lobster Pot. But that was a commercial effort back in the very dawn of movies, taken by Billy Bitzer, I think. It was D.W. Griffith's cameraman. That was an actuality. It was only 30 seconds long. They like aim a camera at something and it only had a shot that was that long. And so, but that's the very first film that was taken in Maine.
And I know that you have a preservation service as well.
Yes, we figured out that we had to, well, first we were transferring things to videotape of various formats, and now we digitize. But if we didn't do that, we couldn't use our own collections. And once we had the equipment and the personnel to do that, we realized we could do it for other people too and charge money for it and help them out, help ourselves out. You know, it's like buying a wash machine and then doing the neighbor's laundry and collecting a quarter, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you offer an important service, and it can be hard to find. So I'm looking at your website and it says you do home movie transfers from videotapes or old film, and you digitize that. And then professional archival services, you design an overall preservation plan, and you work with I know that you work with individuals and institutions, because I contacted you a couple of summers ago when I was getting all of my home movies digitized.
No, we have this great big vault, a three-story film vault. And for long-lasting preservation, you need to have cool and dry temperatures. And that can be an expensive proposition to build, even as a reasonable-sized institution. It's expensive. And so we found that some places it's more efficient for them to store them remotely here. So I think we have 60 or 70 mostly institutional clients. There's some individuals, but mostly institutional clients who store their film with us, and we keep it at 45 degrees Fahrenheit and 25% RH, and that helps it. But that goes along with our ability to digitize materials. It's sort of one-stop shopping. You don't have to, if you're some college that put all your film here and then you need stuff for a reunion, we can digitize it. And it never has to be shipped out of here. It can just stay here, and it's safer and all that.
Do you digitize nitrate film as well?
No, we don't do nitrate. And mostly we're not set up for 35 millimeter, which is what nitrate is always 35. Basically, again, because of this bias towards home movies and television, like we don't do theatrical. And so the small amount of, like, early home movies were on 35, and we have a few of those, but we have to, you know, write grants and send those out to have them done.
Yeah. You started this in 1986, a great thing, and you accept films not just from Maine, although you have a Maine focus.
Yes. We started out thinking we were doing Maine, but when you're dealing with home movies and things like logging or skiing or fishing, state borders don't really mean a whole lot. And nobody was collecting film in the surrounding states. Actually, the Rhode Island Historical Society was the closest place that had a collection when we started. So we did not claim Rhode Island, but we, you know, we actually ended up going all the way to Massachusetts because we got called one day. A guy had found four reels of film in Faneuil Hall of the centennial celebration of Faneuil. And he said, I called everybody and nobody wants it. And I was like, well, that's ridiculous. You know, he called the city, he called Harvard, and he, you know, and like nobody was set up to deal with it. And I said, I'll take it. So then we claimed Massachusetts after that until we figured they'd wake up and start collecting important stuff, some shouts.
And are they?
Not particularly, no.
No, only Rhode Island still has the archive, as far as I know.
Rhode Island does, and we have a good relationship with Rhode Island Historical Society.
Yeah, yeah.
Strangely enough, I went to school in Providence, and I lived on Hope Street and walked past the Historical Society and ignored it completely on my way to class every day. It was years later when I realized it was like an early hotbed of film preservation, and we took a pilgrimage down there to see, I think, Lawrence and Kathleen Carr back in the day had started down there.
Yeah, a long time ago, before me, way before me. I forgot to ask, but tell us something about your background. Why was this of interest to you, David? And Jane, you described off the mic that you do everything that David doesn't do. So what does that involve? Go ahead.
So I studied film in college, and I wanted to work in film. And my then wife and I moved up to Maine, and we're trying to be a little production company. And there wasn't a whole lot of work to be done up here. And if we didn't have a national reputation, you know, it was hard. It just wasn't a lot of action. We found this old logging film at the University of Maine where there was a script. And we said, you know, we could write a nice little grant and restore this. Record the soundtrack and, you know, transfer the pictures. And it'll be a good little project. And then we'll go back to Boston and get real jobs. You know, that was the master plan. Except, so we put this old film together. And then I think in the grant, we said we'd expect to show it 7 times and get an audience of 100 each time, fingers crossed and hopeful. 800 people came to the premiere. Oh, more than that, 1,200 people came to the premiere. It was a 600-seat hall at the University of Maine. And it was just amazing. And then we had crowds up and down the state that came out to it. And it wasn't like, all we did was reconstruct a thing that was already there and represent it to people. And we said, there is power here. Like, this is really interesting. I wonder who's got all the old film. Well, everybody had a couple of boxes in a corner or things, but there was no staff and no time and no equipment. And so we eventually just decided, like, well, maybe this is an opening and we should, you know, take off our not working filmmaker hats and put on film archivist hats and see if we can collect stuff and let other people make the films later.
And it's that kind of pivot in your career that changes your life.
So my creation story is way better. So I was a sociology major, and when I got out of school, I had the student loans to pay off, and I had worked in the local paper mill during my summers to pay for school, and I got an offer to go back in there for some quick money, and that's where I was working, and I came to visit Northeast Historic Film when they were doing outdoor, like, come through the back door and watch a movie. And I was fascinated because I was such a history nerd. And I just kept coming back a few times and I asked a ton of questions and I drove everybody crazy. And then fast forward several years, I got a cold call at the paper mill saying, we remember you. You were really interested in a place. We want to hire our first full-time pay because, you know, being paid here wasn't a thing. And the paper mill business is getting really sketchy along the Penobscot River. So I took the job. But the way I had heard about Northeast Historic Film originally was someone had saved some game films out of the garbage at the high school. And they had brought them into Northeast Historic Film to slow them down to see the people. There was a guy whose brother played on the state championship football team in 1958. And come lo and behold, my dad was on the team And my mom was the head cheerleader. So I came in. That was my first visit here. I wanted to see my parents as teenagers. And it was amazing. Mm. So, because I knew my dad was in the film, but then to realize, like, that's my mom. Cheering for my dad.
Who were your parents before they were your parents?
That's right. And I was hired not because I had a film background, but because both of my parents graduated from here. And everyone from Northeast Historic Film was from away. And they needed a liaison to the town to kind of endear Northeast Historic Film locally. And I was a safe bet on that.
There you go. So if you had to describe like what you do every month, I mean, is it a balance of, and people are still donating films, right?
They are.
Yeah.
And,
and preservation. You have a paid preservationist. And I noticed that you even have a theater where you show contemporary films.
Yeah, that takes up most of my time, actually, the current theater stuff. But to bridge to the archives, we show an archival movement before each feature film. So everyone is free from trivia and ads for, you know,
popcorn.
Right. But we put butter on the popcorn and we saw Moxie to go in it.
There you go. Oh, I was going to ask you a question. So are you involved? Well, I see that you have a Facebook page, Instagram, Vimeo, and YouTube. So are you sharing clips from the collection on those pages?
Yes.
Yes, we do, as well as on our website. We probably have, a few thousand things up on our website and some hundreds on the various other platforms.
And am I right in something from the back reaches of my brain that movie studios will contact you and say, do you have whole movies of, you know, blah, 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 people doing this? I'm thinking of these recent Academy Award nominee films that included clips of random people's home movies made to look seamless with the rest of the movies. So if someone were to donate film, I think they have to sign it over to you. But you work with the movie industry, correct? And that must help.
Absolutely.
We do, for sure. In most cases, it's like, you know, Ken Burns or Netflix or broadcasts, you know, often mostly documentaries, but it has been used in some feature films. Our footage has been used occasionally. Mm. And that picked up more because of the pandemic, actually, because filmmakers were restricted from doing location shooting. So they started to think more about archival types of topics, which turned out to boost.
And everyone was home watching streaming services. So the demand went sky high for those genres. So it kept us going.
I would imagine so. I would definitely imagine so. Is there anything else that you want people to know about Northeast Historic Film that we haven't covered? And what do you think of the future of Northeast Historic Film?
Well, you know, it's kind of a slow motion transition. For maybe 25 years, we collected a giant pile of analog film and videotape, which suddenly, 8 or 10 years ago, became pretty much worthless, and it all had to be digitized, which is, I figured out how many millions of dollars would cost to do it all at once, and it was more than I cared to keep in my brain. But so we've been working on that, and so like that's the focus of a lot of our grant writing, a lot of our fundraising, is to try to make our material more accessible. I mean, and everything is, you know, what we built, we built a study center with the idea that, you know, classrooms full of students would get bused here and they would like do projects. Well, forget that, you know, that's over. And now it's like they got a laptop, and if they're going to do a project, they want to go to your website and pick out a top, you know, and study that way. So we've had to sort of change direction and, you know, kind of keep up with or try to. The future, I think, you know, we still have years to go before we have digitized a large amount of, you know, the most of what we have in our collections. And if people would stop giving us stuff, like we could get, you know, get it done quicker. But it's amazing that there's more out there, you know, after 30 some years, like there's still people knocking on the door, walking in with an armload of stuff saying, here, you gotta have this.
We found this in the basement of the school or in the back room of the historical society or,
oh yeah, you know,
my cousin used to work for the city and, you know, we have these up in the attic.
I mean, that's absolutely literally like everything you just said is true. You know, that happens all the time. It's the basement of the church. It's upstairs in the historical society. It's, you know, I think that's partially because nobody knew quite. People had a sense that this stuff was valuable, but there was no institutional holes, not very many. And so it kind of like went here and there and it got tucked away and it's still coming out.
Well, I mean, when I think about all the film that you've collected and saved, and I think about what the Rhode Island Historical Society has done, I also think about all the people that are tossing things because they think, I've got this reel of film and I don't have a projector. What am I going to do with it?
The people are often surprised by our interest in their home movies because they say, who cares about my great aunt Nola's birthday party? And we have to explain to them that it isn't specifically about your aunt Nola. It's more about how people dressed and how people, what a birthday party looked like for the middle class, you know, in Maine or whatever. And there's a lot to be learned from those images.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge piece.
So when I was a kid, we had a projector. We had a movie camera, a Super 8. And I still have all of that. I took all that from my parents' house. And not sure what I'm doing with a projector. You need one. I certainly donate one. Because I don't know what I'm going to do with it. But my parents would play the movies for like entertainment. You know, we'd say, oh, let's sit down and let's watch all our home movies. And we would do that. And now that I had them digitized a couple of years ago, I did that with, had my mom and my cousin, who's only like 10 years younger than my mom, over to look at the movies. And it was great because they would say, oh, well, I remember that. And this is what happened on that day. And this is why we were here. And weren't these parties great? And they went on and on and on. So the power of film, I think, is a greater storytelling vehicle than just a still photograph.
Yeah, I've presented films in specific locations. I went up to Great Cranberry Island and Frenchman's Bay, and I was nervous because I had to do this talk. I didn't have to talk at all. They had wheeled in on, you know, the 93-year-old woman who was born on the island, and it was, I mean, we were in tears because it was so moving. Because she was seeing herself as a young person, and it was amazing. I mean, sometimes it gets looked on us, and it's just, we don't forget how important these images are, but it's great to be reminded how powerful they are.
They're so powerful.
And it's one of those things with an audience, and people think, oh, it's a silent film, it's the kiss of death, like it's going to be so boring. If you give people like 20 seconds, somebody will say something and then it just starts. And if it's film that's connected to there, and that's one of the great advantages of doing this as a regional archives is that we stay kind of close to home. It's not the great issues of the day, you know, the national stories. It's when the church burned down 50 years ago or what, you know, other local things.
And yet in some respects, that's more important.
Exactly. To that group of people. I think of it sometimes, I say narrow casting. You know, it's not everybody in the country doesn't necessarily want to see this, but for the few that are connected at all, it's even more relevant, more important.
Yeah.
And when we show logging films, which is our, you know, we're known for work, which is kind of neat. So it's really, really important to older people that had a real connection, they did woods work, and maybe they have their grandchild with them, and they run to the screen and they point and they say, this is what I did. And it's really important to them to have that connection and to pass it on and say, this was me. Look how hard our work was, and nobody works that hard anymore. And so it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
David and Jane, I want to thank you for being on The Photo Detective. This has been great. Known about you for years. Fabulous. Thank you. Well,
great. Really appreciate you having us, and it's been fun to talk.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review, and if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.